All right, well, let's get started. And my name is Mike Glazer. I'm an alcoholic and an addict and a ne'er-do-well and a this, that, and the other thing. I am whatever you think I am. And and I say that meaning that I'm not codependent and I'll be whatever you want me to be no longer. I'm just, you know, your reality is your reality. So, you know, have fun. Anyway, so... this is welcome to the Embracing Neurodivergence meeting. It's kind of like we're going to do it like our sort of our normal Embracing Neurodivergence meeting. We meet once a week. I'll put that stuff in the chat unless someone else does. In the meantime, I don't know how many other co-hosts are here because I think that's how you do it with the chat for now. But at any rate, we meet weekly on Sunday afternoons in the East Coast. It's 4 p.m., 1 p.m. Pacific, and usually 9 p.m. in the Ireland, UK, and then in, you know, the other time zones, you can do the math. but we're gonna have a basic, typical meeting, and we're gonna have Harry do a 15 to 20 minute lead, and then we'll open it up. So sometimes we do, you know, a speaker. Sometimes we do, you know, reading from a couple books. I'm gonna open up the slides. This is our typical slide deck that we do. Welcome to Embracing Neurodivergence in Recovery. Safety guidelines. We strive to maintain a safe and supportive environment. All forms of harassment or harassment, whether ethnic, sexual, or personal, is unacceptable by this group. For the safety of all participants, anyone engaging in such behavior will be removed from the meeting. Thanks for taking our safety seriously. Who are we? We are a peer support group of people in recovery from various addictions who are also neurodivergent. We're not here as professionals. We do not diagnose people, nor tell anyone what to do or how to be. Neurodivergence is a relatively new concept that presents neurological differences as normal variations rather than pathological disorders. It refers to the brain's development of neurological pathways that influence performance or functioning, such as intellectual functioning, reading ability, social skills, memory, attention, and focus skills. Some neurodivergent conditions are autism, ADHD, and OCD. We encourage people to inquire with professionals to learn more. Embracing neurodivergence. We are here to learn how to embrace our differences and thrive with them by providing a safe environment to explore and discuss our challenges and successes while honoring our unique characteristics of addictions and neurodivergence. The format, typically, we currently are reading from either Scattered Minds by Gabor Mate or Unmasking Autism by Devin Price, or occasionally a selection chosen by the week's meeting chair. We'll typically read a chapter, and it might take a few weeks from one book and then jump over to the other book. That way we have a little bit of sort of consistency as we read through a chapter. Then we open up for personal shares. Today we're going to have Harry share for a few minutes, and then we'll open it up for shares. Please raise your virtual hand, real hand, or message in the chat if you wish to read or share, and you'll be added to the queue. If you choose, you can type your share in the chat and the host will read it out loud for you. Sharing guidelines. We want to learn from your knowledge. Please share about your own experience, strength, and hope, and refrain from giving unsolicited feedback, advice, or commenting on another's share. Please be mindful of the length of your share so everyone has the opportunity to participate. And that is that. So I'll stop sharing. And by way of introduction, our friend Harry has been involved in this meeting for most of the time it's been around, I think, and it was started a little bit earlier this year. I believe it was in maybe January or February. Just a bit of history here. First is, Xander got the idea of doing this because they're neurodivergent and had talked with a couple of other folks about doing this, and so they started it, and a bunch of us jumped on the bandwagon and said, yeah, great idea. And it has certainly been instrumental and very helpful. And a couple of the, certainly of the various meetings that are available, and even in the secular world, there's only a handful that I hit pretty much every week. And Although the routine of actually hitting a meeting every week is a bit distasteful to me, so I have to miss it once in a while just because I'm wired that way. And we'll hear a lot about being wired in whatever way today during this meeting. So it's now, without any further ado, I'll introduce Harry to speak about their experience, strength, and hope with respect to neurodivergence in recovery. And Harry, to you.
Thanks, Mike. I'm Harry. I'm a person in recovery. I've been in AA for 12 years now, and not had a drink since my first meeting. So I've been in the 12-step program for quite a long time, but only recently joined secular AA, which I absolutely love because I'm a lifelong atheist. So that's kind of the background to my addiction side of me. Neurodiversity. I got quite nervous writing about this, and I did loads of notes and everything. And then the notes ended up completely chaotic, which is just how my head is. And I was going to do a screenshot of them, but I'm too embarrassed. But I was diagnosed last year with ADHD. I'm 63 now, so I was 62 when I was diagnosed. But nobody was surprised. I am a very hyper person. So what I thought I'd do is go through my story a bit, my recovery story, but with a bit more of a focus on the neurodiversity side than I normally would if I was talking about it in a sort of general meeting, as it were. I love this group. I've really felt at home. It's, you know, found my tribe, as it were. So without further ado, yes. Excuse me looking away, but it's not to do with the not being able to do eye contact thing that everyone knows about. It's to do with trying to read these notes. I had a tricky childhood. It was a very dysfunctional family. There was a lot of stuff going on that was difficult to deal with as a child. And I've in fact done the adverse childhood experience questionnaire, and I've got a really high score on it. So it's no surprise I ended up in the rooms. But a lot of my the behaviours and the things that I now know about, you know, looking back at myself, it was pretty obvious that I was autistic and ADHD as quite a young child. But in those days, girls were never diagnosed. I mean, I don't think I ever knew a girl who was diagnosed with ADHD. There was one boy in our school when I was quite a young kid who was known as hyperactive, and my friend's brother was as well. But basically, ADHD hadn't really been discussed as a thing. And autism in those days, the only people that got labelled, as it were, with autism were people who didn't speak. The idea that autism also applied to people that spoke and, you know, that sort of functioned in the world rather than living in their own world, as it were, that was just not a thing at all. So it was a much smaller group of people that would have fitted within that definition in those days. I went through life doing all sorts of stuff that, as I say, it was fairly obvious that I was on the spectrum, as it were. I read before going to school. I read really difficult stuff really early, and they had to sort of send up to the junior school and then get books in because I read at a rate that they couldn't keep up with in the school books. I was very hyperactive. I was very impulsive. I was mad into horses and ponies. And one thing I did was my friend had a pony, and we lived in a council flat, and we were upstairs, and I wanted to show my mum the pony. And this is the sort of thing I used to do without thinking. I did not think it through. I took the pony up the stairs and knocked on the door and then stood out the way. So my mum answered the door, and there was this pony standing there, which I thought would be great for her. But then my friend and I had to get the pony back down the stairs, and that, I don't know if anyone's ever tried getting a horse downstairs, but it's a lot harder than getting one upstairs. And the other thing I tried to do when I was, again, sort of 6 or 7, was I wanted to run away to the New Forest and steal a pony because I wanted my own pony. And I actually ran away in the middle of the night, having saved up for an alarm clock and bought an alarm clock, set it, and I got miles. I went to collect the friend that I was going to run away with, and I looked on the map as an adult, and it's about 2.5 miles from where our flat was. And in the middle of the night, I trundled off and knocked on her. I got there in the morning, and her parents were horrified and sent me home again. But that's the kind of stuff I used to do. And if I had a child like that now, I would sort of spot it as a thing. But anyway, nobody really did. And when I was eight, I ended up moving from living with my birth mother to living with my dad and his wife, who became my stepmother, and her two daughters. She's a child psychiatrist. And so she sort of took, I was quite disturbed by then, apart from any of the ADHD traits. She tried very hard to sort of sort me out, as it were, and I was given antidepressants and all sorts of stuff. And anyway, so a lot of my behaviour was put down to the fact I'd come from a difficult time. I'd not had any boundaries. I'd been all over the place and had this huge upheaval of leaving all my friends and my mum and going to a new place. And as it happened, jumping a few social classes as well. In the UK, it's quite a class structured sort of place. And the estate where we lived was, I was among people that were from slum clearance from the East End of London. And I then moved to a very smart area where my accent was wrong. You know, the whole thing, I just did not fit in a big way. And so the whole not fitting in and all the stuff that goes with that, I and everyone around put it down to the fact that life had done that to me, as it were. But when I look back at it now, I think that, you know, whatever had happened, I'd never have fitted in, really. I am one of those people that now feels they never fit in. And anyway, so sorry, this is part of being an ADHD person trying to organise my myself. Right. One of the things that I, when I was looking into what to say in this share was, I looked at the research statistics about ADHD and autism and addiction, because I was kind of aware that addiction was much more common for people who were on the spectrum, neurodiverse, than it was for the rest of the population. And I was quite surprised how much more common. It's twice as likely that you'll become addicted when you're a teenager if you're somebody with autism. And even more so if you've got autism and ADHD. They did a huge survey in Sweden of thousands and thousands of people. And so I don't think that's one of those things where it's just, anecdotal. And I kind of thought that anyway. When I went to my first meeting, which I'll get to later, I was really taken by how many autistic and ADHD people there seemed to be in the room. And I'm a person who's got a bit of a radar for it. So anyway, back to where I was in the story. In my teenage years, I was a bit of a nightmare and completely off the rails. I was sexually active very early, started drinking at 13, which coincided with getting involved with relationships. And I put myself in some situations that were quite dangerous looking back on it. And part of that was that, again, our family situation was still very dysfunctional, just different adults, but very dysfunctional. And we were very unsupervised a lot of the time. I carried on. I used to go out and go drinking with boys, and I could always drink everyone under the table. I had a massive tolerance for alcohol, and that was something that got a bit of people thought was clever in my family. They, you know, that was something that got you some brownie points, and among my peer group. So it, you know, there was never any kind of breaks on any of it. And I got into late adolescence. I'm doing that thing again. When I was about 15, my dad found the current boyfriend, who was a soldier, who was quite a lot older than me. He found him in my bed, and nobody knew that he was supposed to be in the house, never mind naked in my bed. So there was a massive scene where my dad sort of threw him down the stairs and a huge amount of shouting. I was nearly taken into care. And I was grounded, and it gave me a big shake-up. You know, I really had to get my act together. So I started trying a bit harder at school and you know, getting things organised and passing exams and so on. And because of that, I ended up going to college and getting a degree, and, you know, had a very different kind of life than I would have had with the way things were looking, as it were. I went off... I did lots of things, got lots of relationships, carried on drinking big time, but always holding it all together. So nobody would really have known that that I was drinking as heavily as I was. when I was I was 36 when I had my son. And when he was 6 years old, so I was in my early 40s, he was diagnosed with ADHD and autism. And that's kind of where the where my knowledge of it really gathered speed. Before that, I just had a kind of knowledge of reading about it and seeing it on telly and stuff like that. I didn't really know much about it. But in a sort of classic way that I and many other neurodiverse people have, I researched it into the ground once I had some reason to, and it became like a special interest. And my son had quite a lot of troubles at school. He really struggled. He was in a mainstream school to start with, and I became one of those sort of tiger mummies that I was a bane of the life of the education authority, constantly trying to get him some support because he really didn't cope with all the noise and so on that was going on at school. And eventually he went to a special school when he was nine. Things carried on. He was in a difficult household. Both his parents, there was myself and his dad, were both very heavy drinkers, alcoholics, really, although I shouldn't really be diagnosing his father, who I'm not with anymore. So my son was living among people that were very heavy drinkers. By that stage, we were sort of drinking in what could just about have been called social drinking, but only just. And by the time my son was 15, my drinking had got difficult. I was still working and everything, but, you know, I was really getting in a mess. And one occasion, Christmas Day, I was drunk and was spilling alcohol everywhere, and we didn't get as far as opening the presents and all this. And anyway, to cut a very long story short, my son looked at me in a really disappointed way, and that, of all the things that could have made me decide to go to AA, that was such a sort of tiny thing, but it was what kicked me into doing something about it. And eventually, on Mother's Day, which in the UK is in March, I went to my first meeting. So my son was very instrumental in it. Other things were as well, but he was the final straw, as it were. And I got to my first meeting, and it was in a little town where we lived, and there were probably 25 people there, I don't know. And I just felt I belonged straight away, and I've never felt I belonged anywhere. I've been too rough, too common, too clever, too fat, too thin, you know, whatever. I've never fitted in with a group of people. I was always a tomboy, and although of course once feminism was invented that was a bit more comfortable because it sounded better than being a tomboy, but you know, I never fitted in with the girly girls. The boys didn't want to play with me, you know, that whole thing. So when I got to my first AA meeting, I was 50 years old by then, and I just felt I'd met a bunch of people that got how I ticked. And just even at that meeting, I noticed a lot of them had a lot of traits that I associate with what I now call neurodiversity. Wouldn't call it, didn't then, because that wasn't a word I knew then. And working my way through the steps and so on, I was very lucky that I got a sponsor who's still my sponsor, although I've had other sponsors in between when I lived in a different area. She isn't diagnosed either, but I would strongly suspect that she's also somebody who's autistic, and also is not someone who's religious. So although at the beginning I was in mainstream meetings and having to follow a kind of mainstream program, I was basically able to follow it in a secular way, which is good because I'm an atheist. Anyway, eventually found myself before COVID, in fact, I discovered secular AA before COVID and started to go to online secular meetings that were in America, and really liked it a lot. But COVID, of course, has made everything open up so much online. So now, of course, you know, the meeting that I call my home group is Australia. So anyway, the thing that I thought might be useful, as well as my story, is just looking at how recovery and how neurodiversity and recovery kind of interact. And there is a saying that if you've known one autistic person, you've known one autistic person, and that just sums up. We're all very different. Some, you know, people have all sorts of different things. There's a few things that people kind of have in common, but So I'm really talking from my own perspective. I'm very, I've also got complex post-traumatic disorder, and I have a lot of problems with crowds and so on. So Zoom has been an absolute godsend to me. I'm so much more comfortable being in a Zoom room than I would be in a big meeting. But I've gone off the point now. Anyway, I'll try and get back on the point. So my recovery, anyway, the things that help me with the way that I am are the routine that we're kind of encouraged to follow as recovery. I try and keep a pretty strict routine, which generally speaking, I've slid out of it a bit lately, and I know I'm not comfortable with it. I do quite a detailed morning routine with yoga, followed by affirmations, because I don't do praying, followed by doing a reading and a gratitude list. And I've adapted the steps. I didn't kind of abandon them when I decided to do a secular program. I've adapted them. So routine is one thing that has really helped me. And when you read about how to manage ADHD, that is also one of the things that's recommended for that, when, you know, as I understand it. So the routine side of recovery has been really helpful to me as well. And the socializing bit is the next thing I put on my list. And I'm actually a very sociable person, but I'm sociable. When I'm socialising, I put forward a persona, if you like, that's a kind of jolly buffoon kind of person. And that isn't always the whole of me. There's this little wobbly girl inside, and there's a very insecure person. And, you know, those bits of me don't ever get shown except to people I trust. And one of the things I found about recovery is that I caught myself sharing in a kind of humorous way all the time and not showing the real me. And I've had to learn that because I have a huge fear of rejection. One of the things I discovered about ADHD is there actually is a neurological reason for this fear of rejection. I thought it was because my mum didn't want me, but actually there's a thing called rejection sensitive dysphoria, which goes with ADHD. And I was quite relieved to discover that was a thing, because it kind of explains, and all, I can feel rejected if someone doesn't want to come for a cup of coffee with me, you know, that I can take anything as a rejection. So the socializing thing and disclosing stuff about myself, I've had to learn that and take a lot of risks inside, as it were. The next thing I put on my list is honesty. We're supposed to be an honest program, obviously, but I think one of the things that I'm overly honest quite often, and too blunt, and quite often say things that aren't tactful. And I think that's the thing that quite a few people who are neurodiverse have also found. You know, that isn't such a problem in AA, because people are quite blunt, and, you know, there isn't that whole, there's not a lot of bullshit in AA. People say what they think, and if they think you're not being very sober or whatever, they'll say so. So my bluntness has actually been less noticeable in the fellowship than it is in the wider world, as it were. The other thing that I found out was to do with ADHD and also autism in some people, is the oversharing stuff, because it's something that I've always done. I will meet people and tell them my whole life story within no time at all, and I'll tell them all kinds of stuff about me, and then I'll be really worried that they don't like me because I've told them too much about me. But I used to think that again was a psychological thing, and I used to think, oh, it's because I want to kind of give them a ready-made excuse for why I'm a pain in the ass, basically, because that was kind of where I was coming from. But apparently lots of people with ADHD do this as well, this thing of telling people, you know, and getting right into the details of your life in a way that's kind of, a lot of people might think was inappropriate. So that was kind of comforting to know that wasn't just me. The other thing that I do is I relate. If somebody tells me something say somebody says, oh, I've got this operation, I'm having an operation, I've got this medical thing, I will immediately show some, what I see as showing some sort of empathy by describing one of my operations. And that apparently isn't normal. And normal, you know, I'm using that as a sort of tongue in cheek. But it seems, again, that's a very ADHD, neurodiverse thing. Showing empathy by recounting a story from your own life, but the other person may well perceive that, as I've discovered, that you're always talking about yourself. And I've had to try and learn, you know, not to do that or try and moderate it a bit. The whole fitting in thing in AA, I've felt I fitted in far more because we're kind of, a lot of us are misfits within AA and you know, well, not within AA, within the world. And the thing about our neurodiverse recovery group is, you know, it's a specialism within a specialism, if you like, and I feel I really fit in there. I connect a lot with people. I'm a very techie kind of person, and I do a lot of messaging people and stuff. And that's kind of one of the ways that I reach out to people who are new. I'll quite often message them in a meeting, and so I think the connection side of recovery has been really important to me. And I think it's easier to do it within a framework. It makes socializing easier for people that, like myself, who don't always find it easy. It makes it easier if there's a framework or some reason why you're contacting somebody or whatever. So there are a load of other things that I kept. Oh, I know, masking. That was the other thing. Particularly women. There's quite a lot of research and writing about people learning to mask their autism or their ADHD or their other neurodiverse traits, personalities, conditions. And I have definitely done that masking thing. The more I find out about things that are particularly ADHD, which is where I really, the bulk of me, that seems to be the thing that defines me most. But I've masked it in many, many ways. And alcohol was a way of calming down in social events so that I didn't do that jiggling about thing, and which I'm starting to do. So I was trying not to bang on the desk. yes. So I think I'm probably running out of time, and I've run out of my notes now anyway. And as usual, I've shared in a fairly chaotic way, but I suppose what I've done is given you kind of an example of what neurodiversity in action. I didn't really talk as much as I would have liked to about all the positive stuff about it. And one of the things as a parent of an autistic child, I was really very keen for my son to not grow up thinking it was a disorder, and we never called it that. You know, we always tried to talk it up. And there's a whole lot of politics about how you label children, how you label adults. There's a whole load of stuff that I haven't touched on at all, and it will probably come out in other people's shares or it might not. But there's masses of, you know, if anyone ever wants to get in touch with me, I've got masses of links all over my browser history of stuff that's about this, you know, this as a subject. And yeah, right, I'll grind to a halt there because otherwise I'll just keep talking. So thank you all for being there, and I'm looking forward to hearing from other people.
Thank you, Harry.